From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 17th day of February 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. Mike Zuzulo is out of the office today. A bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will be here to take up the agricultural weather forecast and along the way, update the agricultural news for you today and remind you that it's time to register now at willag.org for the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $30, and the whole of the Farm Doc team, along with 10 analysts that you hear regularly here on WILL, Eric Snodgrass, who we'll talk to a bit later, as well as Bob Ray from Illinois FBFM and Mark Cheney from John Deere will be there. I hope you will too. The cost is $30, and that includes your Beef House roll and coffee in the morning and the Beef House meal at the noon hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $6.77¾, a penny and three quarters higher. The May at $6.77½, up 2½, and December new crop 2¼ higher at $5.95¾ a bushel. March soybeans at $15.27¼, up 3/4. The May a penny higher at $15.22¼, and new crop November $13.86¼ for the coming crop, up 2½ cents for the soybeans. Bean meal down 30 cents for the day. The bean oil 39 cents lower. Wheat futures soft red, ½ cent higher at $7.65½. And the hard red up 8 cents for the day at $9.06½. Live cattle futures finished at $164.65, 57½ higher. Feeders up 30 cents at $186.52½. And the lean hogs today at $85.27½, down 50 cents on this Friday afternoon. Glenn Ring from Glenn Ring Enterprises, online at Glenn Ring with just one N in Glenn.com, now joins us. Hi, Glenn. Thanks so much for being with us. How are things in the southwestern corner of Iowa?
Well, if you go 5 miles north of me, they're great, but they got about 3 inches of snow and we got 8. So I've been out blowing snow this morning. My cheeks are sore, my lips are chapped, but the snow's been long.
Here we don't have snow on the ground, at least not at the moment, though I suppose we'll get colder again at some point. We probably ought to talk about the marketplace. Usually when I talk about the markets with you, it's much bigger picture, longer term kinds of things. What have you been thinking about recently as it relates to the corn and soybean markets?
Well, and it relates to the entire marketplace for a starter. I mean, I actually wrote a newsletter to my people saying, you know, sitting back, I've been in a lot of waiting rooms with medical issues for my family, et cetera, and I've been hanging around saying, you know, been able to think about things. I see a marketplace, if you really stand back and look, that is having trouble sustaining momentum in any particular direction, much of it. And what we really have is a marketplace that, on a very big scale, you might call it non-trending. To put that in quick perspective, if you remember when we peaked in 1974 in corn, new crop corn peaked at $4. We didn't clear $4 for 34 years on the new crop. Well, what did we do the rest of the time? You can call that non-trending. We were sideways in really big ranges. So I think most of the marketplace, and this includes non-commodities as well, the obvious exceptions would be like the interest rate futures, but the big picture is a lot of it's going into non-trending. But for that perspective, non-trending to me would be is that we're likely at the high of ranges that'll last, you know, the next 2-3 years or probably work to the downside in many, many markets.
When you think about that in perspective of what the farmer, the landowner should be considering as it relates to their business operation longer term, how do they put that in perspective?
Well, I think what you do is, and this will give them a little bit more confidence in doing this, go back and look at corn and soybeans and wheat and soybean oil and meal and virtually all the crops, cotton too. And when you get three big up years, and that doesn't, I'm not talking about where the year closes, but where you had ranges that were big and up, it's very uncommon to be up in the next 3-4 years after that. So work from a defensive standpoint, looking at the likelihood is that your prices early in the year, first third of the year, are often going to be your best. Certainly first half of the year are typically going to be your best in probably for the next 2 to 3 years for the most part. So you want to be defensive. Err on the side of selling a little too early than a little too late right now would be my perspective. The only caveat I would have on that on the very short term, Todd, would be if we were to close above the highs we've already posted for the year in soybeans, that would have been Monday on old crop beans, on May beans, ones I'm tracking. In December corn, that would have been the high on the first trading day of the year. So basically call it $6 on December corn. If we close above those highs, then we get to hold off until April, to the April to June window to get too aggressive. But if we can't get out of here and start coming out of here and closing over those highs, you start getting nervous sooner than later.
How much time do you think they have?
Personally, I would not be, I wouldn't be anything, I wouldn't be setting with nothing sold at this time. I'll tell you that much. That's the first standpoint. I'm more interested in value. How much time do I think they have? If we close below this week's lows in any of the corn contracts, any of the bean contracts, my view is very little time to start doing something. No time to start. No more time to start doing something. I'm just not going to fight it if it wants to start breaking down. It is uncommon to come down and just, you know, crash in this time frame. But there are years, there's a handful of years that December corn has made its yearly high on the first trading day of the year. And in most of those years, once you started down, which would have been as early as February, you just bled all year or bled with occasionally a 1 to 3 week weather scare in between. But you've often just bled all year. So sometimes it just wears us out and people will say, well, we're oversold. We should rally. We oversold. We should rally. Well, maybe we should, but we don't. So I'm more inclined to say, I want to see what my bird in the hand is right now, Todd. That's my number one strategy, is just to protect myself against the upside. My percentage odds of having markedly higher prices in the next 1 to 3 years are less than 10%. And that's based upon probabilities, based upon historical multi-year patterns. My probabilities thus of being not up are 90% or higher, and my probabilities of being down towards the lows of the last handful of years at some point in there are up in the area of 70 to 80%. So if that's the case, I want to be very defensive again. So I don't want to lose opportunity waiting for nickels and dimes when I could be risking, you know, the half dollars and dollars and maybe more.
I've heard you more often than not talk about the larger economic cycles and the energy side that drives them. Where do we stand with crude oil, in your opinion, as the driver in this marketplace?
Crude oil is in a very similar situation out here. Is I have the highs of last year having been the quote-unquote double top, because if you look at the products, gasoline and heating oil, with their highs of 2008, those are the retest highs. So I think that's the first retest, and now we get ready to work on over the coming years swinging back down. I'm actually in a mode of fairly neutral on the energies for the next handful of months with a bit of a downward bias. I do think, though, that we've run the energy, no pun intended, out of the upside enthusiasm in those markets. So I think we've got most of the bad, call it supply news or whatever you want to call it out there, factored into expectations. And I'm talking about very macro degree or even grand degree, multi-year, multi-decade degree. I think we've got most of that factored in right now. So I think now we can just kind of drift lower, spike on news events back up, but drift lower overall. Probably not in time to give a lot of relief for the planting season, you know, for say diesel fuel, but maybe enough time to give them a little relief. So I'm kind of, people have asked me about buying fuel, for example, I'm going hand to mouth right now, you know, 30, 60 days. I'm not trying to get covered all the way into the season yet. But, you know, the big energy in the system is gone stagnant. I think it's been infused, and then it takes decades to diffuse into the system.
When you think about the planting season in your part of the world, in that southwestern corner of Iowa, heading into the upper parts of Kansas, out into Nebraska. Will there be more corn or soybean acres put in the ground this year than usual?
I found, Todd, that this area right here does not seem to be a good barometer for anything. What I've learned from living over here now 8 years, that it's been very, they're almost atypical. And I don't get a sense of commitments to change. But when I start going into northern Nebraska and going up into northwest Iowa and into Minnesota, South Dakota, it's hard to get out of the attitude of let's plant corn, despite the issues and challenges out there. So I think from the standpoint is the cost factor of putting in corn, and this is just an anecdotal take from my standpoint, I think the bias is going to end up being a little bit heavier beans, but probably really not less corn, but they're just probably not going to push for the last extra acres of corn is the way I sense it at the moment.
Anything else to add before I let you go today?
Oh, I go back to the standpoint of the bird in the hand aspect, and I really ask people to do themselves a favor and go back, and if they can find 50-year charts, they can get them online if they want to look in some of the markets. Stand back and just see the perspective so that they become comfortable. Get comfortable of being understanding the context you're in on a multi-year basis so that you don't get so amped up on short-term stuff.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's Glenn Ring. He is with Glenn Ring Enterprises online at glennring.com. If you're wondering who's going to be at the All-Dag Outlook, let me just tell you who's going to be up front. Eric Snodgrass, Gary Schnitke, Bob Ray, Ellen Dearden, Chip Nellinger, Merrill Crowley, Dave Chatterton, Chuck Shelby, Jonathan Kappas, Nick Paulson, Bruce Sherrick, Mark Cheney, Kurt Kimmel, Matt Bennett, Wayne Nelson, Mike Zuzlo, Greg Johnson, Scott Irwin, and Joe Jansen. That's a list. You should be, too. Don't wait to get yourself registered for the All-Dag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's coming up Tuesday, the 7th day of March, and you'll get for the $30 the opening Beef House roll and coffee and that Beef House meal at the noon hour. Registration is open now at willag.org, willag.org, or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Up next, it looks like the first plant-based COVID-19 vaccine has withered on the vine. Dennis Guy has more from Canada.
Medicago, the Quebec City, Canada drug manufacturer, has announced that it is closing down operations. While Health Canada has approved Medicago's plant-based vaccine, the WHO, the World Health Organization, has officially given notice that Medicago's vaccine will not receive its approval. That decision is based on what some within the research community see as a WHO policy technicality. The plant host utilized in Medicago's vaccine is a relative of the tobacco plant, and the WHO has a strict, long-standing policy against engaging with tobacco products and companies. As well, Philip Morris, a major tobacco company, holds a 21% investment stake in Medicago. Based on those facts, the WHO has officially declined to give its approval for the Medicago vaccine. Dr. Michael Libman, who led Phase 2 and Phase 3 trials of the vaccine, believes that due to Medicago's unique makeup within the COVID vaccine spectrum, should be granted an exception.
We have not that many different types of vaccines on the market. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are very similar. They work on a very similar type of principle, and there aren't that many vaccines. We can compare one type of vaccine to another vaccine and come to a better understanding of what might be the best one to use in a particular circumstance. I think it's too early to give up entirely on one type of vaccine without a good medical reason, I mean.
In late 2021, Health Canada approved Medicago's vaccine. Clinical trials showed 71% effectiveness. The Canadian government has already invested more than $170 million toward Medicago's new facility in Quebec City and its ongoing research. Ottawa has also signed a deal to buy 20 million doses with a promise for 56 million more doses over time. With Canada's population exceeding an 85% vaccination rate, the Canadian population doesn't need that many more doses, so Ottawa's plan was to export the Medicago vaccine to poorer countries around the world. But with the WHO refusing its approval, Dr. Michael Libman says that plan is no longer tenable.
Although I understand the reasons why WHO has adopted this kind of policy in general in dealing with tobacco products and tobacco companies, this is not a practical approach to dealing with a problem, a pandemic, and a problem that we have that's causing a lot of problems around the world. And consider that this situation is so important that maybe finding some way to make an exception for them.
Medicago's parent company, Mitsubishi Chemical Group, has formally announced plans to wind down Medicago's research and facilities in Quebec City over the next several months. Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
And our thanks go to Dennis Guy and the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for bringing us this story. On Fridays, we always check in with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible to talk about the weather forecast. Eric, thank you so much. Oh, and thank you, by the way, for participating in the upcoming All Day Ag Outlook. It's a little more than 2 weeks away now, and I'm really looking forward to having you at the Beef House.
Yeah, me too. And the best thing is the timing of it. You nailed the timing right, because I'll have brand new long-range weather updates that will have come out the night before. So that'll be some of the freshest ears on that data when we get there on that Tuesday. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. Speaking of fresh data, actually, I want to look at some fresh data, but that has been used in the last month or so. Can you recap February? Because to this date, it just seems like an odd one to me.
The oddness of it is how mild it's been, right? So when you look across the state of Illinois and everywhere east of us, we're talking about a top five, top 10 warmest February so far on record. And that means every time we've had precip roll through, it's mostly been in the form of rain. Now, the issue is that if you look at the precipitation stats, if you look at the drought monitor, it would appear as though we're out of drought, we've got moisture and everything's good. But I hope someone listening has taken like a soil moisture sample, gone down there and had a look, because you look at the entire profile down to 40 inches, there's still deficits. Now, that's winter. Sometimes that happens. We just carry a fall drought like we did from last year through winter. The question is it going to be revived? And is there going to be some cold air coming? Well, I got good news on both fronts. But if we talk first about the cold air side of this, coming out of the Arctic right now is a nasty cold air mass that's going to be hitting the northern plains next week. And what we all got to watch out for is that there could be a potentially big storm system rolling across Illinois next, let's call it next Wednesday, Thursday timeframe. And that one could have enough cold air in it to put down some snow, maybe in the western and northern half of the state. So the pattern has been active, although it's been mild. We see it staying active, but there's going to be some colder air finally coming in here at the end of the month of February. So that's all of it out there right away, just where we've been and what we have to be on the lookout for here in the near term.
Do we have any idea what the spring might look like yet?
Well, I've got four ideas, but they're all the same idea. Okay. what I mean here is that right now we've got data from all of our four major forecasting agencies. So they trickle in starting on the 6th of the month and going until yesterday. So what do we have? Every one of them agrees that the Ohio River Valley, the Mid-Mississippi River Valley, will likely be wet this spring. They do not have us down for cold. That doesn't mean we can't have a frost event that's a little later. That's all still there, but they don't have us down for cold. What they have us down for is wet, which means the nitrogen management is going to be key this spring. It means that your planting windows will likely be pretty tight this spring, given what we're anticipating in terms of precipitation. And that's been very consistent across all the models. That's my top story for us here in the Eastern and Central Corn Belt.
And once you put them all together, your top story is that. Do you have anything to add to it from your own side of it?
Well, I always do, right? I think the thing that I'm most concerned about is what that late window a planting might look like in terms of severe weather. There's a lot of indications, given how deep the cold is in the west with all that snowpack, that the pattern could go quite active, and we could be talking about, well, the jet stream really just targeting central U.S., which means numerous storm systems in spring and possibly some severe weather. That's the only aspect of it I don't like. I like the precip, but I don't like the severe weather that can come with it in March, April, and May.
Does the western part of the Corn Belt get enough rainfall to recover completely?
Well, if you ask NOAA, today they say that there's going to be some improvement in the next 60 days for Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota. They keep drought in Kansas. They keep drought south of there in Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado. But they suggest that the drought, while not being removed, will have some improvement on it going into spring. And you can make an argument that they probably got that pretty close to right.
Turn your attention to South America. What are you watching?
Well, we're cold this week in Argentina, so the fact that it's dry isn't necessarily a problem. But the heat will come back on late next week in Argentina, so we'll go right back into that discussion as to whether or not the rains are going to be coming through. I looked at some NDVI data, and two of their important areas, Santa Fe and Entre Rios, they're still really low in terms of plant health as observed from satellite. But Cordoba and Buenos Aires are back to average after some of the rains we saw in January, late January, and now into the front half of February. But it's Brazil. Brazil has got tons and tons of rain still coming to central Brazil. And in that same area, we have the highest NDVI values over the last 20 years. I think the crop that's going to be coming out of Brazil for soybeans is going to be very, very large. And I think the safrinha crop that's going to go in behind it, they have every economic incentive, as my good friend Arlen Suderman would say, every economic incentive to make that a big crop as well. So we got to keep an eye on that.
Anything to add about the La Nina, El Nino, the MGO, anything that's big on the planet that you watch?
I'm training you. I hear you tossing out these great terms, Todd. I love it. Here's the good news about La Nina. It's let go. It's faded. It's out. We're just now going to be talking about how quickly it transitions. I think we'll spend at least 6 months in neutral conditions before we really start talking about El Nino having a bit more of a grip on the pattern. But overall, that's a good signal. Not having La Nina improves our chances of seeing reduced drought stress. I know there's kind of a double negative in there, but basically no La Nina means better chances of having good spring and summer rain without the excessive heat. But you remember, just as well as I do, that we're months away from when we could possibly be talking about significant heat stress. We'll just keep an eye on this, but La Nina off the table is a good thing.
Thank you much.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible, and will join us for the All Day Ag Outlook. You can, too, by registering today at willag.org or on the FarmDoc website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The cost is just $30. If you can stay with us on our home station, Commodity Week comes up with our panelists this week, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Dave Chatterton next. If not, it's already up on the website at willag.org, and you can listen to it on many of these radio stations over the weekend.